It's now time for The Sit Down with Don Tony.
The Sit Down, where Don Tony talks one-on-one with his followers.
What are you looking at?
About the world of pro wrestling, pop culture, and so much more.
The Sit Down with Don Tony.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
Give me back that filet of fish. Give me that fish. Give me back that filet of fish. Give me that fish. Who remembers that? It's popped up on my computer today for no reason at all. Click on me. Oh, my God. I don't know what was more annoying back then. That fucking fish. And I almost bought one in the store. They probably still sell them somewhere. That talking fish. Or, you are an idiot. Hey, everybody. I'm in a good mood. I still feel a little shungada. We're finally negative. I know my grimy fingers. We're finally negative. Yeah. All right. The Sit Down with Yours Truly is here. For those that might be new to the show, every Sunday night at 8.05 p.m., I sit here and we sit down. And whatever you want to talk about, we will talk about. Everybody who is live, get that opportunity. We have a live chat going. We have super chats. They get a little bit of VIP treatment, of course, because every little bit helps for the show. And I got to give a shout out to Mikey from Brooklyn. Anybody that saw the Q&A mailbag this week, we opened up a couple of gifts live. I picked up some mail yesterday afternoon, and I forgot to bring it home, but he got me one of those, well, it's used. It's his grandfather's hat. Now, I don't know what the fuck you're trying to say, that I'm like a grandfather now, but he's got one of those pancake hats that the Italians used to wear back in the day. You see Butch wearing it on SmackDown. If you ever watched the original Godfather, Robert De Niro, the pancake hat, sent it to me, authentic, looks real, smells like cigars. He wants me to wear it on an episode. So I will wear it. And for those that are going to ask, have I ever wore one of those pancake hats? Yeah, back in the 90s for a little while when I would go to the coffee shop, you know, we had that little phase that we all wanted to be like Goodfellas, or we wanted to be like the Godfather, so we would kind of dress like them a little bit. Jay Lover, any of you from the Northeast that know the wrestler Jay Lover, when I used to manage him, you know, he would come out wearing a pancake hat because he is Paisan. So, so we'll have that on an upcoming episode. My dad used to wear them. In fact, I do have some old school pictures of my dad from the 70s and maybe the earlier. Once Miami Vice came around, that was it. If any of you have ever seen pictures of my dad, I probably will pull, maybe I could pull up one during the show if I could find it. If you look at my dad from the 80s, number one, typical 80s guy, but not only that, you didn't want to fuck with my dad. Triple degree black belt. Actually, do I have the cruise photo? I don't have the cruise. Oh, I do have the cruise photo. Okay, I'll show you two very, very quick pictures. And you know what? I know you have all seen this picture also. I found my folder with some, like, vintage pictures. But here, this is me and my dad from, what, 1986? You know, my dad. Hey, he looks kind of proud of me in that picture. And I have the look on my face like, yeah, I don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. That is us on the same cruise ship. Look at my dad. I mean, seriously, one day for Halloween, I got to dress up like him. Look at that. You know, my dad was pimping back in the day. My brother was skinny. My mom was a twig. Look at me on the right. Look at the white. Was that a bulge? Or did they, no, that's just what happens when you wear Hanes, tidy whities back in the day. This is me on Cybergenics. This is me on Cybergenics. I think that's 1991. That is me with the wife beater. Yeah, we were Jersey Shore before Jersey Shore ever came around. Like my bra on the car, you could run the plate. Goes back to my old address in Middle Village. You ain't going to find nothing there. In fact, I invite you to send something to the old house, motherfuckers. Acid wash jeans, yeah. Alessio, uh-oh. No, that's Sergio. Uh-oh, Sergio. All right, enough of that shit. What do you want to talk about tonight? Let's have a conversation. Whatever is on your mind. I see two super chats already came in. One has to do with wrestling. One doesn't. So you know what? Let's get into the wrestling one first. Now, little instructions for those that don't know. If you're going to ask a question in the chat, just in capital letters, write the word question before your question. If you have a comment that you want me to share with everyone, write in capital letters the word comment. Makes it easier for me to spot it. And if I do acknowledge you, you know, then wait a couple of minutes before you ask something else. This way we spread the love a little bit. So Lascelles Williams, always showing the love. Thank you for the five spot, my friend. Thoughts on WWE not signing Brandi Rhodes? You know, I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm a subscriber to Fightful's Patreon. Fightful really does the legwork as far as being journalists go. They are one of the few journalists, real journalists out there. But lately, I do have a problem with a lot of people who write articles out there. I saw I'm pretty certain you're talking about the article that Fightful brought out earlier today that apparently WWE doesn't have Brandi Rhodes under contract. I think that's coming out because she just launched the Parents podcast. So, you know, it's a little too coincidental that the Parents podcast that is not affiliated with WWE comes out. Yeah, I'm sure wrestlers under WWE contract can do some outside stuff, but maybe that's it. But my problem with the article is this. How come no one, and look, it's a broken record, everyone, get used to it. Just like I used to use the term goofs and matarats all the time, get used to me saying this. How come nowhere in the article does it say, we reached out to Brandi Rhodes to confirm that she is not under WWE contract and we have received no reply? How come that's absent? Does anybody out there reach out, try to? If you get no response, at least you tell, and why use the word reportedly? You know, at least post, you know, an email, a DM. It's not a lot to ask. Listen, a lot of you have been begging me with all the sausage that we did in July and August. A lot of you are begging me to start, you know, becoming a journalist again. I'm not a journalist. I never went to journalist school. But as far as going back to reporting news, I'm not interested on that. I like giving opinions instead. But believe me, I tell you, if I went back to reporting news and I was putting news out there as articles, one of the first things I would always do is send a DM or an email out. And this way, at the end of my article, I could say, I reached out to so-and-so to confirm or dispel this and received no reply. This way, it now puts the onus on that person. Look at Saraya and AEW. How come nobody yet, for 2+ weeks, how come nobody yet has said, we reached out to Tony Khan or Saraya to inquire if she can return to the ring and we received no reply? No one has done that. I can't find one person. As far as WWE not signing Brandi Rhodes, if this is true, what are they going to use it for right now? I mean, yes, look, Cody Rhodes' injury was unexpected. So that might be part of the reason. If Cody's out, then really, why would you need Brandi all that much? And I don't mean to sound cold, but when he returns, maybe they do work out a deal. You know, see, the funny thing that I think people need to understand is just because WWE's a $1 billion company doesn't mean that they go and they spend money anytime they feel like it. You know, I know Tony Khan does that, and you and I probably do that, but WWE does not do that because they have to answer to stockholders and investors and a lot of other people out there. They have to be responsible. So to just say, oh, they're a $1 billion company, they should have put her under contract. Jim Cornette on his podcast said over the weekend that he's shocked that WWE did not keep Paige. And I say this with all due respect to Jim Cornette. Is Paige worth $1 million in WWE? You look at the Sasha Banks, who will be returning. You look at Becky Lynch. You look at Bianca Belair. You look at Rhea Ripley. You even look at Liv Morgan, Lacey Evans, Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, and so many people on Io Sky, Asuka, and you're going to bring back a 30-year-old Paige who has had serious neck issues that might have to really be extra careful, and you have to walk around, you know, on eggshells. You know, could you listen? If you were bringing back Paige 20 years ago in 2002, 2005, 2008, I'd say, okay, yeah. Because, sure, I mean, you know, Molly was uber talented. Trish Stratus became a decent wrestler. Lita was excellent. And, you know, there are a few others. But for the most part, women's wrestling is at that time is not what it is now. So Paige may not be able to go toe-to-toe with those women. So, you know, as far as WWE not keeping Paige on the contract, why? Why? Because she's got crazy followers? Look at Logan Paul. Logan Paul's got an insane number of followers. Has the WWE viewership skyrocketed because of him? Do you see a surge in viewers because he appears? No. When Cody was brought back, did you see this crazy surge of viewers? No. Because wrestling fans are going to watch based on the whole product, not because of any one person. So as far as bringing back Paige, if I knew what she... Here's my answer about Paige, for those asking. If I knew what she could and could not do, then I would give you an answer. But the fact is, 2+ weeks later, we still don't know what she could do and what she can't do. So to turn around and say that WWE should have kept her, we don't even know what the fuck she could do in the ring. Is she worth $1 million to me? If she can't really work like she used to? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's more nostalgia than anything else. So Charlotte Flair, we didn't even mention Charlotte Flair. One fall. What's up? Anyway, when do we see your stand-up performance? I'm an excellent imitator of Vince McMahon, Chris Van Vliet, Aubrey Edwards, and Otis. Otis. Oh, yeah. I'm not stand-up. I'm too lazy. I'd rather sit down. You know, we're doing a sit-down. The sit-down is good enough for me. I'm not that funny, everyone. I'm not that funny. I'm just being myself, you know, a little too relaxed. You know, so many of you who meet me in real life get disappointed because I usually get the same thing say to me, you're nothing like how you are in the shows. I don't know what it is. I think because the shows have to flow like nonstop, I don't even have a chance to like take a step back and say, hey, you know, pull back a little bit. You acted too much like a goof. You know, so I don't think before I talk sometimes. I'm not a good comedian. I was never funny. You know how I was funny in school? When I would pull my pants down and moon everybody. Or if I would break pencils over my head. I don't have any pencils here. But for some reason, I'm looking for something to break. For some reason, people used to love. I would be, remember, this is the 80s now. And in the 80s, you use pencils still. But back in the 80s, I would be sitting at my desk and I'd have like 3 or 4 number 2 pencils. And then for no reason, I would just be in my head and go, just break it over my head. People thought it was funny. Benjamin, why am I so funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? That make you laugh? Fuck. Have I ever thought about getting into comedy? No. No. I mean, the only thing I really want to get into at this point is, you know, my wife's pants. I don't want to get into anything anymore. No trouble, no stand-up. I don't have enough time. Honestly, I don't have enough time. Yeah, farting in class, you know, shitting in someone's backyard, you know, stuff like that, making an ass out of myself. That's what made people funny. But no, if you look at my yearbook, somebody wrote, most likely to either become wrestling heavyweight champion or owner of a whorehouse. Not kidding. I'll pull out the fucking yearbook next week if you want. Somebody requested, I'll do it. Just to show you. Most likely to either become wrestling heavyweight champion or open a whorehouse. All right. Byron Cutler. Have I heard anything about a 7th match being added to Extreme Rules? Yeah. WWE is considering possibly Gargano versus Theory, which I think is a little bit too soon. We are doing predictions contest over the weekend on Patreon and for the channel members on YouTube. As of right now, it looks like that the Don Tony show that we normally do Saturday mornings, we're going to do it this week at Friday night at 10.05 p.m. Eastern, right after SmackDown, because Extreme Rules is on Saturday night. So it'd be kind of stupid to do predictions, you know, 10 hours before. Do it a day before. So hopefully if they do add a seventh match, they announce it on Raw tomorrow. But they are considering a seventh match. You know, remember, we have six gimmick matches. Look, the good old-fashioned Donnybrook is basically going to be like a street fight. That's basically what it's going to be. It's not officially going to be a street fight, but there's going to be a lot of a clusterfuck. And I say that in a complimentary way. Some of these matches are going to go a little bit longer than usual. And now you have Danielle Cormier as the referee in the fight pit. We might see some antics there as well. So look, if WWE gets away with six matches, yeah. I personally think they need to add a seventh because Roman Reigns is not on the card, because the Usos are not on the card. There are several names that should be on the card that are not on the card. Kevin Owens is not on the card. Sami Zayn is not on the card. You know, those are some pretty important names. So we may see something. We may see something. Speaking of Sami Zayn, Gruss is asking, if WWE books Sami Zayn right, he could become the next Daniel Bryan. Nah. See, the thing with Daniel Bryan, his size, where he came from the indies, he was the recipe of someone that would never get to that ceiling. You know, especially with, you know, how WWE viewed their wrestlers. Sami Zayn is a product of WWE now. Sami Zayn, look at the Johnny Knoxville match. You know, people who are pure wrestling fans hated it. It was arguably my favorite match of WrestleMania, because WrestleMania can be a little bit of everything. Sami Zayn is a product of WWE. So fans will beloved Sami Zayn. But no, Daniel Bryan was a movement. It was organic. It was something that, you know, you kind of saw with Rey Mysterio because of his size, but there was still a lot of mystique with Rey Mysterio because of the mask, because of, you know, his history. No, I don't compare Sami Zayn to Daniel Bryan in any way. But I will say, I think Sami Zayn, before his career is over, I think he will become heavyweight champion. I think at least once Sami Zayn will become heavyweight champion. Maybe it's universal champion. But I think Sami, before he retires from WWE, I think he will have at least one run. So Fly, do I see the fans hijacking the DX celebration with Daddy Ass chants? No. I won't be surprised if Billy Gunn, I think I brought this up before. I think Billy Gunn may send a pre-recorded message through the phone. I'm sure WWE would want to view it first. Too bad he can't be there. But no, I mean, you know, a lot of people still, you know, don't make sense of Billy Gunn being with the Acclaimed instead of his sons. I know the storyline and everything else. I watch AEW. I'm a fan of it. But no, I don't think there's that animosity. You may get a couple of fans that just want to be. Look, it's like when Bray Wyatt debuted and you had some idiots at ringside. Husky, Harris. Don't be surprised if you see people still, you know, doing that a little here and there. There's always going to be somebody that's going to say something. But no, I don't see the fans hijacking it just to fuck. You know, they have a lot of respect, especially for Triple H and Shawn Michaels, for what they're doing for the fans. Nah. Always get that jerk here and there, but not on as far as a whole. And if Billy Gunn does do a pre-recorded message, I guarantee you DX will be on that microphone immediately after to shower out any chance of, you know, daddy. And even if they did say daddy, yes. What is, there's nothing wrong with that. Showing love to Billy Gunn. It's not a fuck you to WWE. So, no, I don't see anything wrong with that. Shout out to Tristan. Loves the channel. Says I'm one of his favorites. Did you take your meds today? I'm joking. I appreciate that. I really do. I just try to keep it real. Try to talk to you like I taught. This has been my formula since 97. Yeah, we got off track here and there, you know, outside noise, politics, and a lot over the years. We get off track, but for the most part, I try to talk to you like I'm just talking to my friends hanging out. But I appreciate that. Z-Paul is asking, who got paid more at WrestleMania 3, Hulk or Andre? Hulk Hogan. Andre got paid nicely, but Andre was way, way, way past his prime. You know, 93,000 people showing up. Yes, it's because of Hulk and Andre, but no, Hulk was the guy at the time. My thoughts on AEW's recent ticket sales? Yeah, they're doing beautiful. Some people were showing me 2 weeks ago, oh, look, the top area is all cut off. I say the same thing that I keep saying. Scalpers are buying a boatload of AEW tickets because they believe that because they put the quality of matches they put on free TV, that there's a good shot that these scalpers will end up making money off those tickets. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. At the end of the day, AEW gets their money. If I owned a wrestling promotion and I sold 1,000 tickets, I found out that a scalper bought 200 of them, and then that scalper only gets rid of 50, and I have 150 empty seats in the building, well, guess what? I still got paid for 200 tickets. So you want to pay for a ticket and then try to resell it, get greedy, and then get nothing? That don't matter. I still got my money in my pocket. AEW is doing just fine with their ticket sales. When scalpers get stuck for hundreds and hundreds of tickets because they fucking buy it and they throw it back online for $1,000 and nobody buys it, and then the day of the event, I laugh at the goofs on social media that are like, oh, look, AEW tickets for $2. Yeah, because the scalper got stuck with it, and the scalper's like, hey, $2, you know, is a taco from Taco Bell. Right? Give me a fucking taco. Give me anything. You know, what those scalpers don't understand is if something memorable happens, something tragic happens, I hate to go there, but something tragic happens, you put the unused ticket on eBay. Hey, this is the night that so-and-so died. This is the night that so-and-so returned. This is the night that this person turned heel. If I'm a scalper and I got tickets from Bash at the Beach and Hulk Hogan betrayed WCW, I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do with these 50 empty tickets? And at that time, everything was printed out. You think I'd throw them in the garbage? Fuck no. Put that shit in the safe, wait 10 plus years, throw the shit on eBay. Unused ticket. See how much money I make. Those scalpers, they take risk. AEW still gets their money. The Fiend. Shout out to The Fiend. The Fiend. He wants to know, do I think Bray's pop gets bigger than the CM Punk pop? It's hard to say. You know why it's hard to say? Because we don't know how Bray Wyatt's going to be reintroduced to TV. It could end up being, you know, look, when he debuted as The Fiend, everybody was pumped that he returned. But I think people were in so much awe that it didn't make the noise. You know, I don't base a crowd reaction one night in the building to be the be-all, end-all as far as how fans react. When you look online and he is trending for a day or two straight, and everybody is tweeting and reposting, and you see his video on YouTube getting millions of views, that's what I weigh it on. So, no, I don't think Bray Wyatt, I don't compare Bray Wyatt's return pop to CM Punk's or anyone else's. I don't compare it. You got to look at the overall of everything. We got to see how he's brought back. But I think it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. And, you know, very cool. Very cool that we know he's returning. You know, there's still people out there. Let's be honest, everyone. Those people know Bray Wyatt's returning. But they can't fucking figure out how to get you to tune into their shit. So they got to tease other things still. Those are very, very disingenuous people. You know, it was obvious that it was Bray Wyatt a week after the first tease. First tease, it was still very, very unclear. WWE's testing the water. Once they went full blown, it's obvious that it's him. There's no question that it's him. Now it's just having fun to try to gather how many Easter eggs you can. You know, somebody brought up to me right after the show the other day that I didn't even think about. The WWE file name to watch the pigs video, the file name was 1911. That's the number that was on his hat on an episode of Firefly Funhouse. It just goes on and on and on. It's fun time to be a wrestling fan. Especially, you know, when you see other things that are going to be coming up as well. Benjamin, I never fucking said that it was Cross. Get me the times. I never said it was Cross. The first vignette, we looked at the possibilities because of the Lucha Underground, because of the White Rabbit. You know, you throw a White Rabbit on a fucking screen and you have Jefferson Airplane playing and you don't put nothing else. Of course, there's many ways you could go with that. The minute they started teasing specifics, the Florida Championship Wrestling promo, the come with me, this and that, by vignette number two, we knew who it was. So don't throw that shit in my face, seriously, because early on, right after the second one, we knew. And I didn't tease it. I even wrote with the Aleister Black, I wrote the swerve attempt. Because I didn't want anybody to think, oh, could it be Aleister Black? Instead, you had all the goofs putting Bray Wyatt, Aleister Black, Corbin. How many of you saw that? Oh, boy. Gruss is asking, who should take the title off of Roman? Too early to tell. Too early to tell. I thought Drew McIntyre had the best shot of it all. Thought he had the best shot of it all. I still think that Cross should have cost him the championship instead of Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa could have still gotten involved, but Cross, he ruins his opportunity. I think that would have helped. Let me put it this way. It would have helped Cross more than helped Solo Sikoa. All you have to do is say Solo Sikoa's bloodline. You don't need to do anything else. I'm now feeling it's going to be WrestleMania for Roman Reigns. Cody Rhodes is a possibility. Who knows? Sami Zayn's a possibility. Drew McIntyre is still a possibility. We got to see the road to WrestleMania. We got to see, but I also feel that within WrestleMania or a short time thereafter, we will have two different champions again. That I can tell you. They will go back to two different champions. Having the Usos as a stranglehold for those. Listen, from now to WrestleMania, I think it's Triple H's challenge to build up tag teams and to build up some singles wrestlers who can hold the heavyweight championship again. I think Triple H's biggest challenge is the tag team division. I think he knows between now and WrestleMania, he's got to elevate enough teams that by WrestleMania, he can have two separate tag team champions again. That, I believe, is going to happen. And I think the Street Profits will be one of those two teams as long as they don't split the Street Profits up. I think the Street Profits have earned at least one decent run since their escalation to the top. You know, that SummerSlam moment, I still can't believe that they didn't get it. I mean, look at their current status in WWE. How come nobody is bitching that they're basically being regulated to, hit row. Yeah, that's my impersonation of Angela Dawkins. I mean, their stock has dropped big time. Oh, but Triple H can do nothing wrong. Chad Gable and Otis definitely deserve it. Not right now, but I think that's Triple H's biggest challenge right now, elevating tag teams. By WrestleMania, shit starts getting split. All right, this is non-wrestling related, but it's a 20 spot from Big Sal. I could only bring back one, Retro. All right, he's got three chocolate bars and two of them are gum and one is candy. So I'm assuming pick one of the chocolate bars and one of the candy. All right, you can only bring back one. Reggie bars, Butterfinger BBs, or Summit bars. Summit bars, I remember eating them in school. To me, I thought they tasted like Twix. Summit bars were good, but I think they're a little bit before my time. Reggie bars, I mean, look, my favorite baseball player of all time is Reggie Jackson. Reggie bars, I ate boatloads of when they first came out. I thought they tasted good, but they probably tasted a little bit extra good because it was my favorite player. Butterfinger BBs, though, I don't know, man. I used to throw those on ice cream. You take a box of Butterfinger BBs and put it right on top of like a Carvel ice cream. Oh, my God. Even though I absolutely love Reggie Jackson, I would choose Butterfinger BBs out of all of them. Yeah. And then he's got Gatorade gum, Space Dust, or Skittles gum. Wow. Space Dust was like Pop Rocks, if anybody remembers Pop Rocks. So Space Dust is still available in different forms. Skittles gum, I don't know if any of you out there have had Skittles gum. Skittles gum was a gum that, and I remember this clearly, you would put like a whole bunch of pieces in your mouth and you would chew fast, but then you realize it's not Skittles, it's gum, so you can't swallow it. So sometimes you swallowed it anyway, thinking that you're eating Skittles or trying to convince yourself you're eating Skittles. But I would chew it so fast that the flavor would go away too quick, and then I would chew more. Skittles gum was good, but why have Skittles gum when you can have Skittles, right? So for me, Gatorade gum. Oh, my God. Gatorade gum was fucking awesome. I played Little League Baseball. And we would have packs of Gatorade gum, and we put like 5-6 pieces in your mouth, and the lemon, it would be so bitter. You'd be at the plate, and you're chewing on the Gatorade gum at the same time. And if anyone out there has ever had like bitter gum or Gatorade gum, you're trying to like hit, and then the bitterness of the gum, you'd be like trying to bat, like, you look like a bunny. You look like the White Rabbit. Like, you're like, what's wrong with your tooth? You start focusing on the bitterness of the gum and you strike out. I have to go with the Gatorade gum. Gatorade gum was awesome. I don't even know when that was discontinued, but I know it's discontinued because I remember a long time ago looking for Gatorade gum. Like, nah, we don't make that. We don't sell that no more. That was good. I like that. A lot of retro stuff lately. I still don't understand why that popped up on my screen before. And just on a YouTube recommendation, Filet-O-Fish. And I see the fish, you know, the talking plaque. I'm like, oh, no. It's like, you know, when are you going to give it up? When are you going to, you know. Was that guy Rick Ashley? Ashley, whatever his name is. It's like that. I click on it, and I'm like, oh, God, that fucking talking fish. I remember opening up an episode in a Minority Report back in the day with that. AS7607, shout out to you. She is dealing with uncomfortable back pain. Praying it goes away soon. I don't know if Advils work good for back pain, but you know, when I fell, you know, a lot of people don't even know, you know, I fell on my wedding night. I took a dive and it's supposedly caught on video. When I get the video of my wedding reception, I am going to post a video of me taking a dive. I walked up to the DJ booth to tell him to make an announcement, and the area by his booth was so slippery because of the smoke on the floor, the clouds, when I was doing my first dance, I fucking flew up in the air. Whoops! And I had a knot on my hip. I think I took Advils that night and actually felt better. Blue Chew was awesome, Chaos. Blue Chew, Big League Chew. Big League Chew, you just chewed it because you wanted to see who could have the biggest, you know, like, bulge in the mouth. Problem is, you know, it would be interpreted a little bit different. That's all I'm going to say. John Vickers, I think I gave his shout out on YouTube, seeing how you were feeling. He's got COVID and his back really hurts. Yeah, you get muscle aches. You do get muscle aches. I mean, I remember last week or 2 weeks ago for me. Look, I tested negative today for the first time. Tested negative. I think back, that was like 12 days of testing positive. That's like the 12-inch version of COVID. And I've been vaccinated 4 times, but I do remember the first 2 days, 3 days, feeling really beat up. You know, I'm like, did I lift like heavy garbage the day before? Like, why am I so sore? But it does do a number with you muscular. So, yeah, drop in temperature could do it. Muscles contract. But I think Advil's worked for me. Blue Chew is something different. No. If Guardian's talking about the Viagra Blue Chew, I've never tried that. But they do have a Blue Chew that's like raspberry gum. It was similar to Big League Chew, but it was like shredded gum. And you would put mounds of it in your mouth because you would get this surge of berry goodness. Problem is, it would go away so quickly. And then you would just put more and more and more. It's like the Skittles gum. But no, the Blue Chew, you're talking about Viagra stuff? Yeah. Luckily, I haven't had to go through the Blue Chew phase yet. But I hear people plugging it on their shows. You know, I hear everything is either Manscaped Blue Chew or Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon. I didn't even try Magic Spoon when I was on keto. I might buy some Magic Spoon. I heard the cereal's good. I actually have heard it's good. But now since I'm off keto, you know, it's like, fuck Magic Spoon. Give me some Grape Nuts. That's good. Give me some Peanut Butter Crunch. Captain Crunch. It's okay. You know, when I see myself gain 2-3 pounds, then I'm like, okay, you had your fill. You had your fill. I'm in my honeymoon phase as far as, you know, I'm just eating whatever the fuck I feel like it right now. Do I remember bubblegum ice cream in the carton? I don't remember bubblegum ice cream. I remember bubblegum flavored stuff. You know, definitely bubblegum flavor is good. I remember Italian ices that were bubblegum flavor from the ice cream truck. You could go get the Italian ices, like the Merino ices. They would have bubblegum flavor. I think Lemon Ice King in Corona Queens has bubblegum Italian ice. So, yeah, the Blue Chew of today is Viagra. So, People's Champ, what are my thoughts on people giving up their lives and rights away for signing a contract? Depends on what the contract is for. If you're talking about the devil, you know, I'd be like, hey, you know, maybe you should hire an agent first. You know, I don't know as far as giving their rights away. If you're saying as far as like in pro wrestling, you know, it depends on what you think your value is. Depends if it's the only opportunity you think you'll get. You think that that's the best offer you could get. That's what contracts are. You got to look at it closely. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I had an offer to go to Stitcher. I had an offer to go to another radio network. Some of you remember about 2 years ago, me teasing that another network out there was looking to bring my shows aboard. But, you know, I didn't think realistically that it was really worth it. You know, and then I got the impression like, oh, they're giving me an opportunity to showcase my show to more people. And I'm like, motherfucker, I've been doing this 25 years. You know, if people are new to the show, that's still awesome. But I don't need nobody to fucking... And then Blue Wire came along, and Blue Wire is like, look, this is what we'll offer you. And I looked at it, and it's like that wolf from that bad cartoon, the Tom and Jerry cartoon, when his eyes popped out like this. I was like, yeah, that's cool. And then Pro Wrestling TV approached me about doing my shows on their network, and they gave me a nice offer that I couldn't refuse. You have to be careful. You know, you sign, look at, you know, people like MJF and others. You know, a couple of years ago, do you realize today's the 3-year anniversary of AEW Dynamite? I posted it online. I mean, I didn't expect social media to make a big deal out of it. You know, unless they write it themselves first, you know, they don't give a shit about, you know, other people writing it. But I was like, wow, I'm pretty surprised the lack of, you know, AEW hardcore fans celebrating that today's 3 years of Dynamite. It's a pretty big deal. It kind of changed wrestling TV the last couple of years. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody. But you look at MJF 3 years ago, nobody other than maybe MJF thought, wow, you know, this shit could, you know, for him, could really turn into something big. And, you know, he realized what he needed to do. But 3 years ago, he could have went the route of Marco Studd. I'm not saying that that would have been realistic, but you don't know. That's what agents are for, and that's what this is for. Napoleon, do I still talk to Matt Zombie and Brian Damage? For those that don't know, when I used to do my wrestling hotline from 2000 to maybe 2003, I was doing the Blackheart Sports Entertainment Hotline with Mad Zombie and Brian Damage and Timmy Arson, God rest his soul. He was the ECW Zombie. We all did a hotline together. Brian Damage, I actually talked to shortly after Timmy passed away. We sent a really beautiful floral display to his funeral. We actually had someone make a Blackheart roses. It was a pair of aces, and it was black hearts. I think it was four aces, actually. It was black hearts. I have not really talked to him since. He still does a blog online. I think it's called Damage Control. If you go look it up. Mad Zombie, I haven't talked to in ages. I heard he died. I heard a lot of stories about Mad Zombie. I don't know what's true. I hope he's alive, and I hope he's doing well. But believe me, if anybody knew Mad Zombie going into the 2000s, you know, you say to yourself, most likely to unfortunately pass away too early or be in jail for 20 years, he probably would fall into that category. You know, he was a really tough son of a bitch, man. And, you know, not a bad guy. I mean, really would go out of his way for his friends. But... you know, he was battling his demons. I don't know if he's still around. My gut feeling tells me that he passed because he was such a hardcore wrestling fan. He was so outspoken. And I know a lot of you have heard, I played some of the retro hotlines. I have some of my retro hotlines from over 20 years ago still, the audio. But he was so outspoken and so passionate. How do you not, like, have the urge to just go online and just talk? You know, especially today, it's so easy to put audio online. 20 years ago, it wasn't, you know? So I would think by now we would have heard something. You know, I hope he's alive, but I honestly, my gut feeling tells me he's not. Bash 8 says, AEW did under a million. Meltzer said it's because of Hurricane Watch. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. I think AEW did a decent number this week. They did like 990. Understand something. It wasn't just people watching hurricane coverage. You had a lot of people with their power out. You had a lot of people that were kind of like preparing in other states. Like, you know, honey, you got to put the sandbags outside. No, Dynamite's on. I got to watch this segment with Andrade and 10. You know, no, I mean, there's a lot of people that were preoccupied, and it wasn't just sitting at home and watching storm coverage. So, no, I agree with Dave Meltzer. In fact, if you look at the Don Tony Show synopsis from yesterday, I wrote, AEW scores impressive rating despite hurricane. There was multiple reasons why their viewership went down this week. Next week, if it goes down, it's a different story, you know. There sometimes there is a legit reason, and honestly, this is one of them. So, Rams fan is asking, would I open or close the show with MJF on Wednesday? My opinion is this. On Friday, they went off the air. Who did they go off the air with on Friday? Oh, fuck, I'm drawing a blank. It was Roosh and John Silver. Now, I know that they're loyal to John Silver and everything. The Acclaim to your fucking tag team champions. I understand they open up the show to have a strong rating when the show opens up. But understand that when your announcers say the main event tonight is John Silver versus Roosh, if you're going to put them last, instead of the Acclaimed, don't fucking call it a main event. Just advertise the matches, and that's it. You know, if the last match of the night is not your main event, don't call it a main event. Because in my honest opinion, the Acclaimed, who are tag team champions right now, that is more important than a Dark Order member versus Roosh. Did they put Roosh in the main event because it was his birthday? Because he signed the contract? Here's your reward. You can main event Rampage. Huh? Muchas gracias, amigo. Thank you. Fuck out of here. Start treating your belts with some fucking respect. Not just the ones that have honor. Just my opinion. Just my opinion. The Acclaim should have closed out. So now as far as MJF... No, I wouldn't have MJF main event Wednesday. I know they have this fascination that Wheeler Yuta is going to be one of their future big stars. To me, he's still, it's like Maven meets Taka Michinoku. You know, I'm sorry. I'm just not this huge fan of Wheeler Yuta. There's nothing wrong with him. Look at his fucking promo in Philadelphia. This motherfucker is supposed to be a babyface. And he's making fun of Philadelphia, and he's making fun of a dead boxer, and he's making fun. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with Ute? Seriously, I want to get Fred Gwynn from my cousin Vinny, and I want someone to dub it over. You remember when Fred Gwynn, when he played the judge in my cousin Vinny? Ute, what's a Ute? I want somebody to dub it over and go, Utah, what's a Utah? What's a Utah? Utah, what's a Utah? Seriously, I want someone to dub over that scene, and instead of Ute, put Utah. Motherfucker, you know, let them look. They want to keep making him seem bigger than what he is. At the end of the day, he's going to be like a Maven to me. That's just my opinion. To me, Daniel Garcia is all the way up here, and Yuta Michinoku is all the way down here. And remember who's the person that started the Yuta Michinoku? Who's the one that called the Inner Circle jerks? Back in the day. Who's the one that brought up a lot of other things? You know, people eventually catch on. And like minds think alike. Did I cover the White Rabbit phone number message yet? Oh, yes, Ray. When I go like this on the archive, that will be the link to last night's show. We opened up with it. We talked about it for about 25 minutes. We got into everything. And that was fun, you know, putting it all together in such a short amount of time. Yes, we definitely covered it. So Bob the Builder has a comment. Thank you for the five spot, my friend. His problem with AEW is the fact that Yuta and Garcia get consistent main events over the likes of Miro, FTR, Andrade, Wardlow, Starks, Hobbs. That is criminal. I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, Miro, I think, look, please, do not misconstrue what I'm about to say. I think Miro, it's business. Hey, you want to pay me all this money and just have me cut promos? I am the prophet. I am the redeemer. I will be your love slave if you want me to. I will call you dad. I think Miro's like, just pay me. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do, boss. You know, I think, honestly, I think Miro sometimes calls his wife up and she's like, hey, who did you wrestle today?
The Redeemer. I redeemed another week. My body feels good. I don't need to do nothing.
You know, I think he absolutely is fine with his contract. He comes across to me like, hey, I'm getting paid. I'm whatever they have me do, I do 200%. I am a huge fan of Miro. Miro is probably one of the smartest people who have signed an AEW deal. Some of the others, like FTR, look, we saw that a mile away. I mean, you realize it was 6 or 7 weeks ago that we were joking about FTR holding all the belts except for the AEW belts. Now somebody says to me, oh, they cut a promo at some indie event yesterday. Hey, boss, book us. You know, you think they're trying to piss off Tony Khan by working an indie show? This is all storyline. This is part of storyline. But meanwhile, the weeks go by and they ain't doing shit. What are they going to do next? They're going to fight the fucking Ass Boys. That will eat up 3 more weeks. And then meanwhile, another 2 months go by. And then when they finally win the titles, you know what someone's going to say? Long-term booking. Long-term booking. I hope AAA or New Japan or someone out there, the day before FTR is supposed to win the AEW tag titles, I hope AAA says, we need you to come here tonight and drop the titles to Jose Schmuck and Leandros Rujos. I hope when they get those AEW tag titles, I hope those other promotions take the belts off of them. This way, when they walk around with the AEW tag titles, they only have 2 sets of titles now instead of 4. That's what I would do. Tristan is asking me, what do I think of the Vince McMahon Special Elite Club? And he's got a pair of lips on there. If it's the Kiss My Ass Club. I had no problem with it back then. I thought it was pretty funny, actually. William Regal, that little peck. Hey, Vince McMahon was an asshole character. Billionaire, could do whatever the fuck he wants. Fool around whatever the fuck he wants. People make it seem like everyday victims. You know, I'm still blown away, with all due respect, that people didn't have the balls to lay the gauntlet on Christy Hemme and say, wow, after all these years, right before the billion-dollar deals and the TV and Saudi Arabia deals, you go back to Vince and say, hey, now it's time you got to pay me, motherfucker. Give me $10 million or I tell the world. You know, I mean, I applaud her. But understand, you know, when people are in that kind of world, you know, there are people out there that will, you know, I'm not saying her, but I'm just saying in general, you know, we're not in that elite world. We're not in that billion-dollar world. So when you go to a party and you walk around, who's that? Oh, she's worth $3 billion. Hey, you know, maybe I can, like, kind of like talk. You know, that's, believe me, opportunity. You know, it's a whole different world, you know. Unfortunately, we've heard about the casting couch in Hollywood and stuff like that. But, you know, there are willing participants. It's fucked up. It's fucked up. I would never, ever be part of that. But when you're in that world, it's a whole different ballgame. And Vince McMahon doing what he did, you know, I mean, it's fucked up. I wouldn't want him as a husband or a father. I'd be very embarrassed. But, you know, he had the money. Everybody was bitching about what happened to all that bombshell stuff that was going to be coming out after and all the criminal stuff. We knew it. We knew it early on. This shit's coming to a close. And meanwhile, those other people like, oh, it's not. We just started. I went on my podcast and reported, it's about over. People like, oh, those two guys from Variety went on Busted Open. And they're kind of like frustrated and nobody's really talking about it because people knew it was fucking over. And it's over. And Vince McMahon made $200 million the following month. Vince McMahon made $200 million the following month. Everybody was had their balls in a bunch about him paying $10 million, $15 million over 15 years' time. But meanwhile, Vince McMahon is at home is like, yeah, I could have fucked 35 women right now and paid them all off and still had chump change left over. Still would have had some gift cards. You know, Vince is the one laughing. Hate to say it, but I'm kind of glad I'm not part of that world, and I think some of you out there as well. So, Guardian of Chaos, the $9.99, much love, WWE Network for a month. Yes. I love it. Well, he believes by talking with some old veterans of WWE, the Triple H, Stephanie, Tony Khan on the surface, but ultimately until his unfortunate passing, Vince still has plenty of stroke. I agree with you 1,000%. Stephanie still talks to her father. Triple H still talks to Vince. A lot of wrestlers will text Vince McMahon. Boss, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Vince McMahon still has input. It's common sense in some ways, but where Chaos is talking about is more hardcore business decisions. Look at the amount of stock that guy owns. He has a say. He morally did something wrong. Morally did something wrong. He's off the board of directors, but he still has a large amount of money invested. He's the majority owner. You think Triple H is kind of like giving it back to Vince? He finally got the opportunity. He calls up, or Vince calls up Triple H. Hey, Hunter, what's going on? Hey, Dad. Hey, listen, Hunter, I got this idea. Shut up! You think Triple H now tells Vince to shut up? That motherfucker owns so much money in that company. He has the right to give his opinion. Vince McMahon is still involved. He is still involved. And I guarantee you that some of what Triple H has done, some of the people they have brought back, they have talked to Vince. And Triple H had said, look, Dad, Vince, we're bringing back so-and-so. I think this person would be great for this, this, and this. Go for it. Go for it. You see the stock doing well. Triple H is doing what his job is supposed to be. Vince McMahon owning stock, he's making tens of millions. As long as he keeps banking it, Vince is going along with it. Makes sense because it's making money. So anyone out there that tries to sell you that Vince has no input anymore, just pay attention to what those people do for a living. And when you realize that the only thing that you could find is that they have like 95 affiliate codes, you know, go shop on Amazon and use my affiliate code because I get paid a couple of pennies every time you order something. When you look at those people and what they do for a living, if they are a teacher, an executive, work in the financial field, have a little bit of, you know, authority, have a college education and graduated in finance, business, stuff like that, I'll say, okay, I'm paying attention. When I see someone out there that writes, fuck, man, this guy today asked me for 5 packets of sweet and sour sauce for his nuggets. I told him no, and he threw a straw at me. You think I'm going to fucking take advice from someone like that? When someone says to me, yeah, man, you got to go on Manscaped and use the promo code JackSplat. You know, so I could get a commission out of it. You know, I don't trust those people unless they do other things. Chaos, you don't have to. You do so much for me, right? You don't have to send that. I appreciate it, but you don't have to send it. Can we do a Vince impression? Yeah. You're fired! My wife right now is like, what the fuck is he doing? She's here. She's here. She hasn't moved in yet. We dealt with COVID for 2 weeks. Now I'm only starting to gain my strength back. So now I have to start cleaning, setting things up so she could come here with pets. So we can't just like, you know, open the door and let me in. So, but yeah. I'm married exactly 1 month tomorrow. And I got a big tennis ball of a knot on my hip and got COVID all in a month. Married life is great. It is. Joey asked earlier, do I feel any different? I do when I forget to put the ring on. I don't have it on now because I took a shower before. So I take my jewelry off because I'm always afraid that, you know, it gets slippery and it goes down the drain. And, yeah, then I got major heat. So, yes, let her in. Let me in, goddammit. Tristan says to him, Vince McMahon will go down in history as the man that made wrestling what it is today and what it'll always be. He's the king of wrestling. Yes, you are absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Spot on. Absolutely right. Vince McMahon is the reason why wrestling is today. Of course, the Steve Austins, the Hulk Hogan's, D-Generation X, the Attitude Era, ECW, Eric Bischoff, you know, NWO, John Cena, you know, Roman Reigns, The Shield. You know, I mean, everybody has helped. But without Vince McMahon, with his early vision and having the wherewithal to go, I mean, look, not everybody is happy where pro wrestling is. Some people would prefer pro wrestling to be still underground and be more of the traditional, what we used to have in the 70s and the 80s. And yeah, that's cool and everything. But, you know, if you really feel that way, then start a promotion and do that. And when only 400 people show up at your show, then are you doing it because you just, you know, are loving what it was back in the day? Or are you doing it because you think that that's the right formula for today? Hey, I still love, you know, aspects of yesteryear. I still have my 91 Lincoln Mark 7. I still have a lot of my boom boxes and stuff like that. And I like once in a while, you know, to use them. But I don't use my Lincoln every day. I use it once in a blue moon because it's not, it's something more for nostalgia and it's something to enjoy a little bit of yesteryear. But you see all these promotions when they talk about equal time for equal women and stuff like that. And then you look at their shows and 8 out of 10 matches are men. And then people are petrified to confront them about it because they want to be part of the in crowd and they don't say nothing about it. And then, you know, you could see the obvious because these people at the end of the day, once it has to do with money, oh, no, I can't do that. Why can't you do that? Well, we don't have the talent. We don't have enough women. Well, why don't you have enough women? Well, there's just not a lot out there. You know, there's still a lot of, what are you talking about? There's lots of women, you see. Do you realize, I said this before in Power. Anybody remember this? It was not a good thing to say, but I said it. You know, when Empower happened and you had Billy Corgan and Mickey James and all of them get involved, I don't know if it was Mickey James that said it or Billy Corgan, but they said, we want all the women out there. Send us your stuff. Show us, you know, and there were thousands of women, maybe not thousands, but hundreds of women in wrestling all across the United States that hashtagged NWA, set links to their social media, links to their stuff, DM stuff, and 90% of them were ignored, you know. So when people are like, oh, there's just not enough out there, that's bullshit. That is bullshit. And look, that's why I felt when Saraya brought out the women's division, they should have waited a week because of the hurricane and everything like that. Instead, you bring out four baby faces, and you look at it, And two of the women that were out there, I guarantee there were a lot of people who watch AEW Weekly. They was like, who that? Oh, that's Sky Blue. Oh, I didn't even know. So it's embarrassing. When are the Amadon Tony guy tees or sweatshirts coming back? I still have a pro wrestling tee store. In fact, I never updated prices. They sent me emails for like the last 2 years. We're raising the prices a dollar. We're doing this. We're doing that. I think right now, if somebody buys a shirt on pro wrestling tees, I think I get a quarter. I think I get 25 cents back. Not kidding. No, I'm going to, in 2023, I'm going to have new merchandise come out. And I think we're finally going to get the new bobbleheads made up as well. No, I'm going to work on that in 2023. It was just, you know, honestly, you know, there was a lot of other things going on, you know, some health issues, but also trying to plan a wedding. You know, that was really, really draining. I mean, physically, financially, emotionally. So 2023, I think it'll be a lot more laid back and relaxed. So Charlie's saying, why would Triple H do things if Vinny wouldn't? Because Triple H is younger than Vince. He has the pulse on more about what wrestling needs today. Vince was more doing things more safe. Triple H is doing things more about contemporary. You know, why do you think the Usos in the New Day fought 588 times? How many times when the New Day was in like a little bit of a lull and then all of a sudden they'd be feuding with the Usos again? Don't get me wrong, I love that feud. But you remember like the Last Dance. Remember they showed respect towards each other in the ring that time? They shook hands in the ring. And I was like, okay, the feud is over. Now they go to separate ways. 2 months later, they're feuding for the tag titles again. Vince did more. I think because Vince is older, I think Vince is at the point that maybe in his mind he wants to work like he did in 1998. But I think in 2022, do whatever is necessary to make profits. Even if it means cutting 100 people, even if it means keep doing the shit over and over again, even if it means this, Vince played more. Put it this way. Since everybody's into football, this is the best way I could put it. Vince McMahon played preventable defense a little bit too much. You know, sometimes you play preventive defense or, you know, you have a lead towards the latter part of the game and you get very, very reserved. I think that's what Vince did too much. Triple H, a little different mindset. Russ, what would the WWE look like if The Undertaker was the Eggman in his Survivor Series debut? I know this is unpopular to say. I know it's unpopular to say, but if The Undertaker, I really believe this, and I've been a fan of wrestling since 79, I have witnessed The Undertaker's entire career, and I loved it. I loved it. I am a fan of The Undertaker. I honestly, truthfully believe if The Undertaker never existed in WWE, I think a lot of where WWE became today would still be in existence. I think that some of the other major players from Hogan, Savage, Austin, Rock, DX, Foley, I think they all would have had a little bit more value. I don't think The Undertaker changed the business. Undertaker is a huge part of the WWE success over the last 25 years. But if you take The Undertaker out of there, you know, I don't see where there's major shifts. You know, I just my honest opinion, he is a tremendous part of WWE history. But it's like, okay, since Aaron Judge tied Roger Maris's baseball home run American League record, a lot of you have been paying attention to that. In 1961, if Roger Maris didn't hit 61 home runs, or if Roger Maris wasn't even on that team, all right, maybe the Yankees don't go as far as they did as far as that year, baseball. But when you start looking at other teams, you could remove a big part of it, and that team could have still won the World Series. You know, Undertaker wasn't the be-all, end-all. Now, if you're going to say Austin or Rock or Hogan, then I could see. I think those three are quintessential as far as where WWE went with things. But the Undertaker, major, major part of the last 25 years. But I don't know how much WWE would have been different if the Undertaker never existed. You know, maybe someone else would have had that gimmick. Not saying Kane, because Kane came around, you know, late, latter part of the 90s. Undertaker came out in 1990. So someone else could have had that gimmick. Don't tell me primetime Brian Lee. Brian Lee sucked as the fake Undertaker, even though he looked a lot like him, but no. Benjamin is asking, what is the difference between no DQ, no holds barred, hardcore match, extreme rules, or a street fight? Not much. Not much. In my opinion, wrestling promotions, when they advertise no holds barred, think that just means that you could cheat, you could get extra physical, you can't be disqualified for it. No DQ is more designed for a run-in. Somebody uses a foreign object, you know, a major one-moment incident. You know, that's the mindset. When you talk about a hardcore match, it is pretty much understood that there's going to be lots of weapons used in the match. Extreme rules, pretty much the same thing. And a street fight is more designed with the idea, when I think of street fight, I think they're going to brawl all over the building. I don't think about that with a hardcore match. When I think of hardcore match, I think it's going to be mostly in the ring and outside the ring, but it's going to be tons of weapons being used. So even though in actuality they all could be treated the same, as far as companies go, promotions go, the aesthetics of it, it is used quite differently. That's a great question when you think about it. But if you really, no DQ usually will be like one major cheat during the whole match or run in, some type of interference, and there's nothing that can be done about it. Every match kind of, you know, like when I say black, what do you say? White. When I say this, you know, like what's the first thing that comes to mind? When you talk about those matches, you, when I say the type of match, you could immediately think to yourself, you know, oh, okay. And that's, and there's other matches that could fall into that as well. All right. We've gone 73 minutes. Time flies when you're having fun. Let's do another 15, then we're going to call it. So if you have any specific question you want to ask, you haven't done so already, just go in the chat, write in capital letters the word question, and ask away. Otherwise, we're going to start wrapping this up soon. Tomorrow night, we have the last Raw before Extreme Rules. It's going to be a good card. I know I don't want to talk about it because most of you out there will be watching this episode after Raw airs. Sam is asking when are calls coming back? Yeah, we could do it soon. You know, the only reason why it stopped, other than some technical issues, is, you know, it was the same thing that happened back 15 years ago and even further than that. You know, I have nothing against anybody who calls in. But I was getting a lot of people who are emailing me and DM me, and most people do it that way because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. They're like, man, it's the same people calling in every single show, same people calling in. You get, once in a while, you get somebody different. But then I was getting people very frustrated, like, man, I have redialed 35 times and same people get through and I can't get through. So, you know, it's a little much, but I will bring it back soon. But I think I'm going to bring it back with a different program. Two podcasters out there did send me software that I could use where I can kind of like give everybody an opportunity to add their name as a contact. This way, when a number pops up, I could see names instead of just blocked or private numbers or whatever. And then this way I can make sure that it's spread out a little bit better. But that's the reason why, to be honest with you. Oh, Eddie, thank you again. Thank you again. I still have, this is for Wednesday. I'm going to wear the AEW shirt. And I have the DMD. We'll put it in the background. You know, for those out there that didn't see the mailbag, how many of you, seriously, this is pretty cool. How many of you at recent AEW shows have you seen this sign in the crowd? Or this one. That's Eddie K, Zylot Deems, that you always see on social media. He's the one, and he sent me the actual sign, which is pretty cool. I almost want to, like, sign it, thank you, write a little message, and send it back to you. But this is pretty cool. That's pretty cool. It's the exact sign. That's awesome. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised how many of you that, like, for some reason, really got a kick of me, like, opening up the stuff on the mailbag and even the letter, you know, from Ari and others. Ari's someone else. I appreciate it. Seriously, I thank each and every one of you out there. I don't take for granted anybody's support out there. I really don't. I really enjoy all the interaction. Sometimes I feel bad that I can't be more at times. The watch parties have been a little bit difficult. You know, last 2 weeks, COVID kind of like does it to you. 2 weeks before, wedding and honeymoon does it for you. But, you know, I try to, you know, do a little something, you know, so everybody could be a little interactive at times. But, you know, unboxing videos are popular. I mean, people loved when I was doing the retro stuff. But, you know, after a while, you know, I don't want to be looked at as the podcaster that kept eating like old shit. You know, we ate 25-year-old cereal. We ate like 20-year-old gum. I mean, I have shit here still. I mean, look, we still have, this is 22 years old. We still have the Goldberg gum from WCW that we never opened. I still have last year's chip to do another challenge. It's just, you know, after a while I said, you know, I don't want to be that guy. But once in a while we'll do it again. All right, let's get some questions done so we could get out of here tonight. One stays, two goes. Hogan, Austin, Rock. If one of them had to stay, Hogan. As much as I'm kind of heartbroken being a Hulkamaniac as a kid, remembering how much my grandmother adored Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan turned out not as good as I hoped. But without Hogan, I don't think you get Austin or The Rock. I don't think so. You know, if you put someone else there instead of Hogan, then my answer would be a lot different. Because then you have to really start deciding, you know, like if you said Rock, Austin, Undertaker, I would probably go with Austin. I would keep Austin because that era in the 90s, Girls Gone Wild, Ultimate Fighting, saying fuck you to your boss, politically incorrect, Andrew Dice Clay, Family Guy, you know, just Maury, Jerry Springer. You look at the 90s. That's why if you ever watch documentaries from the 90s, that was the aura. Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon is probably the biggest reason why WWE won the Monday Night Wars. That attitude and that allowed other things to happen. I would keep Austin. Rock and Undertaker would go. True. Very true. Yeah, eating the old stuff was kind of dangerous. The popcorn, you know, somebody asked earlier, I think it was John, out of everything that I ate, what, like, got me the most sick? I don't recall anything really getting me sick, but I will say the WWE microwave popcorn from 2003, that was kind of fucked up. Remember when I microwaved it? I put the microwave in this room and we microwaved it. That popcorn, that definitely, you know why? I don't think it was necessarily the popcorn. It was the wax from the bag itself. And anybody, you could go do a search on my channel. Just type in popcorn and you'll see the video. The smell was so weird that night that I honestly think the wax from the bag was toxic. And that kind of gave me uneasiness. The cereal was more of just like cardboard. We ate, what, Goldberg cereal from 2000? And that tasted, no, that cereal was March 25th, 2001. It was the day before WCW went out of business. I remember I put the label on the screen. That cereal just tasted like cardboard. It was like cardboard with milk. The gum was better than I thought. The gum, the Jake the Snake Roberts gum was kind of gnarly. The Jake the Snake Roberts gum, that was from what, 1990? That was what, 33-year-old gum, 32-year-old gum, I think it was. That kind of tasted pretty weird. But trying to remember what was the best. What was the best? I can't remember what was the best out of all of them. There was something that I actually ate like a whole bunch of, and I was like, this isn't bad. I can't remember. I got to think about that. I'll get back to you next week. Charlie's asking, what would my grandmother have thought of with the Hogan racist stuff? She would be devastated. My grandmother died in 1991, everyone. This was right before the Sergeant Slaughter stuff, if I remember correctly. So, you know, she never got to see, you know, him overcoming what he did. But, yeah, she never witnessed what Hogan ended up doing. She would have been devastated. But then again, if she was still alive by that time, maybe she was falling out of love with Hogan. Because Hogan would have already betrayed WCW. He would have been Hollywood Hogan. And I can't picture my grandmother getting into her in the 80s, watching Nitro and going, like Hogan, like that. I can't picture my grandma. I think she would change the channel. I think she would be so upset with Hogan that she probably would no longer be a Hogan fan. So she saw him in the late 70s when he was a heel. Remember, I became a wrestling fan in 1979. Hogan in 79 was a heel. He wrestled for WWF. Freddie Blassie was his manager. She saw him as a heel, but she didn't fall in love with him until he came, beat the Iron Sheik, and rest is history. So, would the NWO have worked without Scott Hall? Yeah, I think it could have worked, but Scott Hall was set the table. I mean, it absolutely could have worked without Scott Hall. But Scott Hall set the table. Scott Hall was the first person, and that was very, very important at that time. Most of us were big fans of Razor Ramon. See him show up and do what he did. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. I mean, you needed outsiders. You needed someone to come straight from WWE. You don't wait a couple of months. You make it feel like, hey, they were on WWE yesterday. That was a big deal. Like if Luger would have come out, like if he never showed up on the first ever Nitro and Luger like showed up the next day, or if Jeff Jarrett did, you know who I am, slap nuts, but you don't know why I'm here. I don't think people would have been like, yeah, we don't give a shit either. You know what I mean? So Scott Hall was very, very important. Scott Hall's very, very important. Very important. It would have looked a lot different, WCW, NWO. Would have looked a lot different, but I think it still would have worked. All right. I'm trying to spread it out. We're going to get out of here in 4 minutes. Gabriella, a little late, but better late than never. Much love. Chaos never cared for Razor in WWE, but he didn't. I still remember Razor. I think he fought Vader right before he left WWE to go to WCW. pretty sure he fought Vader and lost. But that match, I was like, wow, you know, I wish WWE would keep him. I don't know, something about that match that just made me look at Scott Hall a little bit different. Funny thing is, you know, for those that weren't around or maybe too young to be a wrestling fan in the 90s, the funny thing is, believe me when I tell you this, nobody that was a WWE fan at the time thought Scott Hall was ever going to be heavyweight champion. You know, when some people are like, oh, how come he never won the heavyweight title? He should have been there. You know, believe me when I tell you also, nobody was saying that about Owen Hart. Nobody was saying that about Brian Pillman. You know, and when people say that in 1995, like WWE knew that Triple H was going to be this huge megastar, bullshit. Bullshit. He was Jean-Pierre Lafitte or Jean-Paul Levesque, I think it was, in WCW. He went to WWE and did almost the same fucking thing. It was like the Greenwich, Connecticut version of the Blue Bloods. Believe me when I tell you, even when I was doing a hotline in 97, like, he started changing a little bit, but they didn't realize in 1995, this isn't like Bill Goldberg when Bischoff's like, we know we got something, we just don't know what it is. Trust me, no one in WWF in 1995 was like, we know we got something, we don't know what it is. Bullshit. Bullshit. Not trying to throw shade on Triple H. I have become a big fan of him over the years. Kind of difficult from the early 2000s, but never, nobody visioned that. All right, we're almost done. Another minute or two. Tristan is asking, since Triple H is in charge, do we think there could be a physical Hall of Fame eventually? I think there'll be a traveling Hall of Fame. I think there'll be a traveling Hall of Fame. You know, a lot of people forget about the WWE store in Canada, or was it upstate New York back in the late 90s or early 2000s? I don't remember when it was, but they have ventured into things where there would be memorabilia and stuff like that. And the problem is, you know, it's very, I could see them doing it maybe at Universal Studios or near Disney, you know, where you always have visitors. That's the only area. But as far as a Hall of Fame, I think maybe a traveling Hall of Fame, like WrestleMania weekend, they come in with loads of stuff and they set it up in a room. It's almost like conventions. I kind of feel that would be more inclined to do. But I think if WWE ever brings a physical Hall of Fame, I think it'll be in a major tourist area. And you know what? Especially when you see what happened with Hurricane Ian. The last thing you want to have happen is WWE have a Hall of Fame in an area that's suspect to hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, and one storm wipes everything out. I think if you have a home base like in Connecticut or somewhere else where it's in storage and then it just shows up WrestleMania weekend, they fill up a little auditorium with stuff, I think you probably have a better chance of preserving history. I mean, look, some of these storms are like once in a lifetime, but, you know, I think you probably have a better chance doing that. So, and yes, absolutely, prayers continued for everybody who is suffering from Ian. You'd be surprised how many people were hurt by it. Pretty wild to see some of the footage. So I thank God that my parents were able to get home the day before. That Tuesday night, you know, it was kind of rattling for me, because I was doing the watch party behind the scenes and ended Patreon. In the back of my mind, I had no idea if my parents were able to get out of Marco Island. They were able to get a flight in Naples late that evening, and they got back to New York. So I think they would have been okay. I think their property in Marco Island is okay. I think they did suffer some wind damage, but you know, I would be very, very concerned, because I think my parents lived through Superstorm Sandy. Any of you out there that had ever seen the damage it did to my parents' house? My parents' house was sideways and had the big red X to knock it down. My father was suicidal. And we don't need to revisit that, but the point is, they didn't like come here that night. They stood in their house and they locked themselves in a room. And when I showed up at that house and recorded 3 days later, and you see what happened, they were inside that house when all that was happening. I could only imagine the traumatic experience they went through. Thank God their, you know, the bird was okay. And it was just, you know, scary. They locked themselves in the bedroom and prayed, you know, and they survived it. They should have been dead out in the sea. And any of you that's a member of my Patreon, that video is still there if you look for it. It's fucking wild. You know what? Maybe since we're approaching the 10-year anniversary of Sandy, maybe I will play it on one of these episodes. Maybe we'll do it this month. Be prepared, though. What you see, you're not going to believe. You see my parents, my dad's cars, they were spinning like toys in the garage. You won't believe what you see. It put it this way. I'm not comparing what happened to him to Ian, but let me put it this way. If I showed you the footage and I said, that's Ian, you would believe it. That's how wild it is. Crazy. Crazy shit, man. All right. With that said, I'm going to get out of here. So I thank you all for spending some time with me tonight. Great topics. Excellent questions. I thank you all for, you know, the topics for today. And don't forget, Monday night, I will be right here after Raw, giving you a post-Raw show. We will talk about that. The thread is already on the channel. So if you want to get an idea of what we're going to talk about tomorrow, it's a couple of Drew McIntyre comments that are pretty interesting. Wednesday, we have the 3-year anniversary episode of Dynamite. They have some decent matches lined up. I think we know the outcome of all of those matches, but still, you know, a decent lineup. And remember, remind yourselves, it looks like, and I'll make it official tomorrow, but it looks like this Friday, 10:05 p.m., right after SmackDown, I will be here live doing a Don Tony show instead of Saturday morning. And Friday night, we'll also do predictions for Extreme Rules. We have a lot to talk about with Extreme Rules. And the Bray Wyatt factor, I'm going to bring up something tomorrow. But I will tell you, I think we're going to get at least 2 segments teasing Bray Wyatt at Extreme Rules. 2. And I'll tell you why Monday night. Everyone, if you enjoyed tonight's show, smash that like button. Otherwise, have a great rest of your Sunday evening. Thank you, as always, for the support. If you know anyone else out there that might like the channel, let them know about it. If you want to become a subscriber, you're more than welcome to. You could get into the predictions contest for this Saturday. You also, if you're an elite channel member, you also get access to the Patreon show they do every week. And shout outs, as always, and other things as well. So believe me, everyone, we are going to have a very fun next 7 days. So stay safe. All the best. Thank fucking God. Finally tested negative. Finally. Now, my luck, I'll get the rebound. That would suck. Be well, everyone. Stay safe.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.